You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we're charting your course deeper into the expanse. I'm your host, Justin Amazneski, and I'm glad you joined us for our second episode on season 5 of The Expanse. Their second episode was called The Churn. That's what we'll be talking about. This mini series of episodes, which are free, Patreon will not be charged for this, is inspired by my co-host. We talk about what happened in the episode, what it means, what we thought about it, and we set the stage for what is to come in our further analysis and in the further episodes. My co-host has seen the season. I am watching it for the first time through, so I'm the one who gets to look like a genius when all my predictions come true. But first, let's bring in my co-host, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. That's right. Episode 2, The Churn. We get to return to Baltimore. We were talking before the show, and I was like, oh, wait, isn't this called Return to Baltimore? No. It's called The Churn. So let's go through.
I believed you when you said it was called Return to Baltimore.
It's funny how my brain works. It's very funny how my brain works. So, the opening is we're with Drumma. And we're seeing her do what she does best, which is look like a badass and intimidate some pirates. And we meet her family and starting to see how she's moving on, or is she? Because the end of that sequence is she put a bounty on Ashford's ship to find it because, you know, Ashford's been missing since, he got pushed out of airlock. So we leave that story and we get to go check out Amos, good old Amos, returning to Baltimore, and we get to learn a little bit about the Churn and what the Churn is, and we see some flashbacks, which I think, Justin, judging by your confusion, you didn't realize those were into Baltimore. They were sort of, woven to the present day. So I want to gets your take on that when we get there. And then we cut out to Holden out on the station, on Tycho Station, and getting the ships repaired. Gets a message from Monica. We cut over to the Mars storyline where Bobby and Alex Bobby finally decides to let her guard down a little bit and show Alex what she's been working on. And then Amos wants to find Eric, and so he very interestingly figures out a way to do that, which I think is pretty cool. And then we get this scene where Avasarala is being sort of, like, marginalized. Like, we see how she's being marginalized. And then we switch back and we see that Holden and Fred are trying to find the reporter Monica, and we find out that she's struggling to breathe because she tried to get out and it started to leak. And then, as Justin said in the Discord, it ends abruptly. And the abrupt ending is we see Amos leaving a message for Avasarala, saying he's going to leave Earth forever, but he has to arrange a meeting with someone. And so ends kind of abruptly. But Justin, who is it? Who is it? He for your first prediction, who is it that he's going to meet on Earth before he leaves?
Who is it he's going to meet on Earth before he leaves?
Yeah, who would he need to call Avasarala and say, I need to meet this person before we leave?
So you've kind of biased the answer there, right? Because you're saying he's calling Avasarala, which means it would have to be someone she knows or something of that nature.
Okay. Well,
so that kind of changes my answer, because I originally thought the person he was going to see in Baltimore was some sort of It was, you know, some ex-lover or something, right? It turns out it was his mother figure, basically. Yep. Whether it was his actual mother or not, who knows? They seemed, the way it was phrased seemed to be that she wasn't. Although yeah. maybe that's revealed later, or maybe that's in the side story that was published. Maybe it's one of those details. But that would be my initial instinct. Was it some sort of personal thing? But now I'm wondering if it's some sort of political thing, something related to what's been going on with the ship and Holden and the proto molecule and everything they've been through with the rings. Okay. So it's tough for me. It's tough for me because when I say the episode ended abruptly, I don't feel like a lot happened in this episode. I don't feel like a lot happened. This felt like stalling. And if it's a non-Baltimore thing he's going to go and do, and it's a non-personal thing he's going to go and do, then I will be severely disappointed because it will have been a waste for him to have gone back to Earth and seen all of that. Like I didn't gain anything extra from seeing him interact with
from learning his backstory. Yeah.
And seeing him interact with his brother. Like it didn't change my perception. Well, of him
to
at
be
all.
To be fair, that's not his stepfather. He had no idea who that person was, right? He never knew that person.
You can have a stepfather without knowing who your stepfather is. Like, your stepfather is just the man who marries your mother.
Yeah.
I don't mean he was literally a father figure to him. I just mean he married his mother figure, so that makes him his stepfather. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I will tell you that none of this was a waste. Minor spoilers. We'll see almost all of these characters in the next episode, so...
I mean, I would hope so, because other reasons, why would you do all of this, right?
Yeah, why would you invest in this? That's absolutely
That's right. Why it's interesting to me that you were like, well, he had to tell Ava Sorella. It's like,
yep.
Why did he have to tell her? Because it seems like, so that means there's got to be some intersection between his personal life in Baltimore and whatever is going on in the grander universal scale somehow.
I don't know about in the grander universal scale, but certainly something there's multiple personal reasons for Amos to be visiting Earth, and this was definitely one of them.
Yeah, but see, you have to understand the perspective that I'm looking at all of this from is if you look at like seasons 1 through 3 of The Expanse, and knowing that there's only going to be 6 seasons, right? I believe Amazon announced that six seasons last. Yeah, then I'm assuming all of these layers with all of these characters are being built up, just like in the first 3 seasons, to have some universal payoff. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean by universal scale. I don't mean he's going to meet someone and it's going to be like, oh, they're the creators.
I'm
going to
control
the
universe. Yeah, okay.
Right. I just mean that this has some sort of relationship to something outside of Earth and outside of Baltimore.
Right. Well, like let's
set up the season that he was coming back to Baltimore to settle his affairs, but he did that very quickly.
Yeah.
Like literally part of the reason I was disappointed.
Well,
was
hold
like,
on. No, he didn't. There's one more thing to take care of.
Okay. But what was said to the audience was,
yeah,
that it was
for
was
Lydia.
His mother's name?
Lydia.
For Lydia. Yeah. There was something else had a character name. Oh, the Army of the Dead had a character named Lily. So I was getting very confused, but yeah, Lydia. He was like, I'm going to go back and take care of Lydia's affairs. And he goes back and he meets Chubbs. I know it's not really Chubbs from Happy Gilmore, but he had the goatee and the hat and he was a black guy. So he looked like Chubbs from Happy Gilmore. And he's like, oh, you're still living here? I'll make sure you still live here. And then he goes and meets his brother and he's like, you're going to make sure he still lives there. And he's like, yeah, I don't care about the old black guy. He can live there. And I was like, well, that was easy.
Yeah,
that settled that affairs really quickly. Like I thought she was gonna have like some super in-depth stuff. Lydia was gonna have some super in-depth stuff that he had to do, but instead it was just like, oh, make sure he can live there, no problem, bro.
Yeah, I think so one of the things just to if because we kind of want to I kind of want to take these storylines in turn. One thing I really liked is when we talk about visual storytelling, Amos is all about visual storytelling. They do such a good job of revealing what he's thinking and what his sort of like motivation is just in little things that he does, right? Like he says, when he's meeting Eric, he says, I'm not here to take your stuff, and then ends up taking the bottle of whiskey, right? He beats that guy up to get Eric's attention, right? Like one of his foot soldiers. And when the foot soldier is sent back to Amos to bring him in, he dumps out the ice and wraps it in a napkin, right? Basically just saying, without dialogue, saying, you know, nothing personal, it's just business, right? And
well, even with the taking of the liquor, I thought it was kind of like showing that Amos didn't go there with any ill intentions, but it was still like, it was like a dominance move where it was like, you know, you can sit here and say like, oh, I'll kill you if you ever come back.
Yeah. But I'm taking your liquor.
I told you I don't, yeah. I told you that I don't want anything, but you know what? I changed my mind. I want this. It's really good. I'm going to take it. You can't stop me.
Yeah.
So I thought it was more of like a dominance
move.
I agree. And it wasn't like him contradicting himself. It was just him being like, oh, I want this. I'm going to take it.
Yeah. And, you know, and then we hear him say like, you know, you hear the dialogue with Lydia about like, I can't teach you to be moral, but I can teach you, you know, like I can teach you to survive. And then like saying like, let's pretend that I can teach you to be moral and you pretend that you love me.
Yeah. I didn't understand that. I think she kind of lacks self-awareness. Like the desire to be moral and figure out how to be moral is in itself moral. So she's sitting there going like, I'm a bad person, but she's showing like awareness of morals and the need to be good and the desire to be good. So on some level, she's some sort of a good person.
Yeah. But we don't know what this, I mean, obviously he was, you know, Amos was, you know, a child sex slave. So like, we don't know what is the dark stuff in Lydia's soul, right? Like we don't know,
right.
we're keeping that purposely mysterious. Like, you know,
we
can fill it in with tons of things, right? Like what, like, and she's not saying I don't know how to be act moral. She's like, I'm not a moral person, right? No, I have things
again,
that I can't be, you know.
Yeah, it is. It is. Again, that's the,
it's not ideal, right? But the way it's presented, I think, is interesting, right? And
also, you just said something that I don't think has been revealed in the show. Has it been revealed yet that he's a child sex slave? Because that I must have missed that.
That is the subtext this entire episode. Like, you were born in a whorehouse. They used you until you were too old. Until the Johns thought you were too old. And then they turned you into muscle. The stepfather said it. Yeah, the stepfather said that explicitly.
Yeah, see, I missed that line. That's why.
Yep.
It does explain why in that scene with his mom, he looked like a young Walter Kovacs to me, because he would have had that same sort of abuse that he went through that would have desensitized him.
Yeah. Yep.
Sort of parallels to Don Draper there as well. Not that Don Draper was abused, but one of the things about Don Draper's past in Mad Men was that his mother was a prostitute, and he had to see the Johns coming in and out.
Yeah. So the next storyline we should talk about is Monica and Holden.
Oh, wait. I want to say one more thing.
Oh,
part of what you were saying about the moral thing is when Amos said, no one really saves anyone. She taught me how to save myself.
Yep.
I thought that was really important.
Yeah, that's a really good line. Yep.
Yeah.
And really part of
number.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'll say it then. I think what's really good about so far the season is there's been a lot of good dialogue in the show so far this season.
Yeah.
A lot of good lines.
Yep. And I think we see the same pattern in, like, Amos's behavior makes a little more sense or is recontextualized a bit with the fact that we see him using other people as his moral touchstone, right? So he apparently used Lydia as his moral touchstone in the past, right? And so that makes a little more sense now that we see him using people as a moral touchstone, because he's, you know, not quite sure. It doesn't compute correctly for him. But anyway, the next storyline that we should talk about is at Tycho Station. So Holden gets a message from Monica, and he decides to go check her room and finds that she's been kidnapped. Shenanigans ensue, and they end up finding her. So this has some like plot implications that I think are important. I think this is another sequence that it's maybe, hopefully, obviously building up to something. But it seems like Fred is losing control, right? Like he says it explicitly in the episode. He's like, I forgot the the dude's name, but his security, his Earth security lieutenant is like, you know, the ship is getting out of control. He's like, it's already out of control. I'm trying to get it back. So we still don't know where the protomolecule is, but obviously people are very interested in it. And Monica was caught in the middle. So I don't know. I don't know what else to say before without spoiling anything. So there's obviously shenanigans going on in that storyline.
Yeah, I mean, most of it was uninteresting to me. Like the whole Monica is trapped and we have to save Monica. That just felt like stalling and, you know, buying time until the next episode. There were a couple of good things in here, right? There was what you were saying with Fred talking to, I forget who the other guy was, but they were kind of just throwing barbs at each other. And this is one of the really good lines of the episode where the guy says to Fred, you know what your problem is? You think that if someone's an underdog, that means they're the good guy. And that's sort of been Fred's entire story, I think, of the whole show for me, is he just automatically sides with the OPA and the Belters, no matter what, because they're the underdogs. And that's something that is very important for our culture to discuss. And I think that's going to be a broader theme of the season. The idea that just because someone's the lower class, because someone's, you know, at a disadvantage, it doesn't make them necessarily moral. They can still do immoral and evil things. And I think Fred's going to have to square himself with that. And I've always seen sort of his character as he's just sort of on a collision course where he has to end up on Holden's team. That's the only thing that makes sense for his character. Sort of like I see this show ending in a way where like all the big major characters will come together and do something that saves the universe or changes the universe, sort of like over the, like I said, the first three seasons. And I see that similar with here. And that was the second major scene for this storyline where they were trying to find Monica and they were trying to figure it out. And Holden was there with Fred and one other person. I forget who it was. But he got in contact somehow. I forget how it was, but he had like an iPhone. Yeah, he pressed the button. But what was the button on? An iPad, an iPhone? What was it on?
It's like their communicator. Their handheld communication device.
So yeah. A communicator. And, you know, Fred was just like, what'd you do? And he said, there's a button, and I pushed it. And Fred said, Jesus Christ, that's really how you go through life? Because Fred is very methodical, right? He's very much like strategic and political and trying to figure out how to play this right. And that's why he has this misconception that the underdog is necessarily the good guy. You know, we talk about on our main show and in general, the importance of looking long term, but sometimes you can look too long term. Sometimes action is necessary in the moment. And that's sort of why Holden's character has been successful throughout this show, is he's been the one character who, when shit needs to get done, he does it, even though he's just like a completely normal guy. I think I said this to you before or on the main show. To me, Holden is sort of like James T. Kirk if you took out the like bravado of the Western hero. He's just sort of like a normal guy who's been put in the Western hero position.
Yeah.
And I mean, Western is in the genre. And that's because he takes action when he needs to. And this was an example of it. And I think eventually Fred's going to have to learn to appreciate that, because it seems like most of their season is going to be together, because right, Naomi is off looking for her son. And they might have to rescue Naomi later on or something. Those two plot lines are clearly going to intersect. But I think that Fred's going to learn to appreciate this action first, this decisiveness that Holden has, and become a member of his team.
All right. Interesting prediction. We'll see if it pans out. So the other storyline, let's talk about Bobby and Alex. So Bobby finally lets Alex in on the secret. Alex is super skeptical, like a good Martian. It doesn't compute for him. So they make the hilarious decision to have Alex try to be a spy. So he goes to talk to this, lecturer who's a higher up admiral or something, I'm assuming. He calls him a traitor. He calls him a traitor.
What's it called when you zoom up and it tells you who plays what? The guy was an admiral.
Okay.
An admiral. Not an admirable. He was an admiral.
And then his aide instead asks him out for coffee. And is pretty obviously playing him, right? So this is the you know, are they, are these people involved in it? Are they not involved in it? What's really going on here?
What's it?
The selling of the weapons to the black market, to the OPA.
So that's still the plot for Bobby this season? We're still on that?
Well, yeah. We got to find out how they're getting all these... Who's involved in getting all these weapons out to the OPA?
Yeah.
And are they getting missiles, right? Because those are first strike weapons. They've already got... She's already pretty sure they've got... you know, she's seen some stealth tech. But is there stealth missiles being sold? That's what she suspects.
Yeah. It's funny to me because season four, I was kind of like over the Bobby plotline. I wasn't a big fan of it. And I was like, can we just get her back with the rest of the crew? And the show's response to that was not to reunite her with everyone else, but to continue it, but give her someone else from the original crew. So yeah. it doesn't, this storyline does not do anything for me at all. I don't find it interesting.
Really? I mean, the deterioration of a civilization is not interesting. I mean, that's a very, very interesting, at least to me, a sci-fi premise, right? Like, here's this motivation, this society, we're seeing it deteriorate because the, you know, of this allure of already habitable worlds. And I think, I don't know, we'll revisit this as more of the plot unravels, because I think some of this stuff is again, groundwork. Like, seeing this deterioration is important, because otherwise, where this is going won't make any sense, right? You'll run into Game of Thrones issues, right?
And I think that's sort of the problem with the entire episode. And you know, I touched on this last discussion we did, where, you know, these aren't meant to be taken singularly. This isn't a traditional show where each episode is its own enclosed story. So you watch this one, and this is laying a lot of foundational work. But sort of for me. And you made the Game of Thrones comparison. Sort of for me, it's sort of like with Khaleesi, right? And what I mean by that is, in the end, Khaleesi went nuts and burned everyone with the dragon, and everyone's like, that came out of nowhere. That foundation had already been laid for me, right? They had foreshadowed that. They had set that up. When you talk about the deterioration of society, I see all three groups having deteriorated, Earth, the Belters, and Mars. And I'm just waiting to see, are the rings going to be a hope for the future, or are they going to be the final death knell in the human species? And that's what I'm waiting to see, is how they affect humanity and the three groups, and the thematic why of that. That's what I'm looking for from the Expanse.
Yeah. And I think we're going to see some more choices being made on all of these storylines, and that are going to be important, right? Like, that's the other thing I like about the Expanse, is that the characters' choices matter. So, you know, Fred Johnson and his choice to hold on to the protomolecule and dealing with those consequences. We have Amos and...
Well, that's been since like season three, hasn't it? These are consequences that are long laid down, aren't they?
Yeah. And well, there's more consequences that will be, and choices that we'll see in future episodes. Amos's choice, he's sitting out there, he's thinking about leaving Earth. Those people come up to him, you know, he's like, no. And then they leave. And he makes a choice. That's when he makes the choice, I've got one more thing to do. He makes that choice there. And he's going to have consequences for that as well. And then Alex, you know, his choice to engage with this conspiracy is going to have consequences for him as well. So, yeah, we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, the show's always been very good with that. With each of, like I said, each of the characters' choices matter, and then they build to the larger whole. Yeah. Like, I think that's really the strength of the Expanse, is it has a very good universe it's built, and then it shows how the characters from the different walks of life affect that universe and change it either for the better or for the worse.
Yeah. I think that it's a great point that you made, and we've probably made it on the main show. Is this is much more like chapters of a book than it is complete storylines, right? In each episode. And I think that we've talked about this before. There's, you know, I think we've both criticized Amazon in the past for releasing entire seasons, right? Versus episode by episode. And because when you're talking serials, usually you want to give people that time between episodes to talk and speculate and savor, right? Like, serials are written in that way, right? But this is much more written like a, or much more in line with, rather than episodic week to week, it is sort of made for binge watching. There are some natural stopping points in the season, but it's sort of made to be one long form story, one season long story, right? And there's less concern with making it good single episodes. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah. I mean, what you're talking about is, I mean, this even goes back to the written word. Remember that it used to be that's the way stories were released, right? Dickens, a lot of his work was released as serials, where each chapter was a different serial that people had to go and buy at the newsstand or wherever they bought their paper, their written work from back then. And then that evolved into books, right, which you fundamentally read differently, and you naturally find your own stopping point. And I do think because of that, regardless of if you like to do week by week or you like to pause it after every three or every two or something, I think it's better to release them every week, because in today's day and age where there's so much content, and if everything's released at once, people aren't really processing things properly if they're watching them in a, you know, they're binging an entire season of 10 episodes.
Well,
you know,
I would have. Are you criticizing the people who stayed up for Deathly Hallows and then read the whole fat ass book in one night?
Yes. I'm criticizing anyone who does that for anything. Right, for anything. I mean, maybe you can listen to a whole album, but even then you have to keep going back to it, right? And to me, there's a difference between listening to an album and reading the lyrics at the same time. So what I'm talking about is just really engaging with it. I mean, if you want to binge it all and then go back and watch it slowly, but the problem is everyone wants to binge everything or read the book really quickly and then have their opinions and have their takes on it and have their analysis of it when no one's really actively engaging with it.
Yeah.
So I think that's why
I like that fact that we are engaging in it and we're taking it episode by episode. I think it's also just it is good to just kind of point out, I think this is more like a novel than a serial, right? Meaning like some of these episodes, you know, this is probably my fourth time through this season. So, you know, there are things that I see that have a bigger impact on me on repeat viewings that on the first viewing I felt a lot more like you, like, well, this isn't, nothing happened, right? Like, I think nothing's happened. But then after you've seen the threads weave together, you realize you see these choices, and I try to point out some of them because, you know, I don't want to do any spoilers, but you know, you start to see some of them and why these, you know, why are we showing this, right? And there's a reason, right? Like, there's a symmetry that I think encourages, or not encourages, it rewards engaging with the story, which is rare for things that we see on, you know, content that gets created these days, right?
Yeah. So the only other thing I really wanted to talk about with this episode is I think the theme or motif, because I don't know if it's the main theme or not yet, of family was very important in this episode as well. Of course, we've already addressed Amos, right, and how that was all about his family.
Yeah.
But Ava Sarala had a really important theme about family.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Where, again, it was, you know, her daughter was there, and it's like, do you continue to worry about the universe, especially when you've been frozen out, as you said, William? You know, politically, we saw that Asian lady really just like shut down Ava Sarala, right? It's like, no, we're doing this, blah, blah, blah. And she went super tiger mom on her, right? Where she stone faced her, didn't show any emotions, and was just super strong about it. So then her daughter came in and was like, you know, you could reconcile with your husband, my dad, very easily. And then you could spend time with me and my kids, just come back to Earth and reconcile. And she was presented with that choice. And I think we've seen a lot of that.
That choice is significant. Very significant.
You know, right. And I think it's been significant for all the characters so far. I mean, Naomi's on a collision course for that, right? Because her son's involved with the terrorist group. And she's going to have to decide, do I pick my son? because her son's not going to give up the terrorist group. And if he does, good storytelling dictates it's in some sort of redemptive sacrifice. Right. And I mean that in the rational way. I don't mean that he's necessarily good because he sacrifices himself. I mean, he's literally going to learn that he did something wrong. And the only way to undo that wrong is to, you know, go against the group, which will lead to him dying. Right. It's not the idea that just giving your life for other people makes you a good person.
Right.
So she's going to directly head into that collision course, and she's going to have to I'm going to guess that her son's going to die tragically, and she's going to have to deal with that. But she's going to have to, when she meets him, realize he's not redeemable, because that's what she's going to want to do. You know, the whole mother's love thing. She's going to think she can save her son when she can't.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how that ends up. But yeah, everyone's making choices right now in this episode. I think that's really what this is about. And then, you know, you brought up the motif. Obviously, the title here matters, the churn, and we get the description of the churn, right? Like, either float to the top or sink to the bottom. Everything in between is the churn. And I think we're seeing that everyone is kind of in the churn right now, right? All of our characters are. None of them are at the top or at the bottom. They're all kind of, I mean, you know, literally Amos is in the bottom of the gravity well, not the top of the gravity well, right? But even more than that, it looks like they don't have a lot of choices, right? It appears like there isn't a lot of things that they can do. They're all stuck in certain ways. So that's, and things are chaotic. That's very much the churn. And I think that's a very appropriate title.
Yeah, and that's consistent with what I was saying about the way seasons 1 through 3 were structured, and I expect the same with 4 through 6.
The one last thing I want to bring up, which is as someone who lived in Baltimore for way too long.
Yeah, was that actually Baltimore? That's what I was asking.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Is that actually Baltimore?
They had that was the National Aquarium underwater there that he was looking at, mm-hmm. and he was looking at from the pier that is over by where I used to live. There's a pier. Like more towards Glen Burnie. He was looking at the, basically from Fells Point, but Fells Point is underwater, basically. And he's looking out at Fells Point towards, was it Pier 5 or whatever, which is where the aquarium is. You can see the glass ceiling of the aquarium poking out of the water.
Well, that's interesting. Surely that's why it looked like The Wire to me, because The Wire was actually filmed in Baltimore as well, correct?
Yeah, they did a very good job of kind of capturing, a both slightly changed in like, you know, adding some modern stuff, but like also decayed Baltimore. It was really interesting.
When I think of Baltimore, I just think of decay.
Well, I think you're probably right.
All right. Anything else we want to add?
I think that's it. I'm excited for the next episode. If you're excited too, make sure to join our Discord server. You can see the link at in the show notes at the bottom of the episode, or go to themidside.com. Don't forget themidside.com/Patreon or themidside.com/locals if you want to contribute. And tell a friend, we're going through The Expanse.
This concludes your journey into The Midside. I'm Justin Emlesneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Avoid the churn.
I mean, can you avoid the churn? Isn't life kind of just the churn?
Well, you gotta sink or float, man. You gotta decide.